This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 135. The date is the 4th of September. And as you can see, there's three of us on the screen. If you're not on YouTube, there's three of us here. We have a special guest. It's called Matt Hugh Gregory with a single T. And he wouldn't describe himself as this, but he's a techie, right? And I'm going to not insult him by saying he's also a nerdy techie. We'll get into that later. We might even have some discussions about Warhammer and Games Workshop. And you all know how I love to talk about that particular company. So, who we got on the pod? Matthew Gregory and my co-host, Henry Viola here at HT Viola. You can find Matthew Gregory at Matthew with a single T, Gregory 5 on Twitter X. How long we're all going to be on there for? I do not know. That's a separate discussion. We might not even have it on the pod. But everyone seems to be leaving and going elsewhere. We're still here. We're going to be on there for a little while longer until we find a new home. I don't know what that new home will be. But until then, you can find us on all platforms, including YouTube. Right. Where shall we start? I think we're going to start with the markets, ladies and gents. And we had a similar sort of situation to what happened on August the 5th. What happened on August the 5th? The market had a little bit of a... And stocks and shares got hammered, right? So last night, what happened was Nvidia had a bit of an issue fit and took the markets down. I've got some numbers here that I want to share with you, ladies and gents, that I pulled up. And then we're going to have a good chat with Matthew and with Henry. But these are the sort of numbers which obviously nobody likes to see. We've got a situation where we had... Tesla down 1.6%. Meta, old Facebook, yeah? Meta platforms down 1.85%. Amazon down 1.37%. Google, Alphabet, down 3.7%. Nvidia down 9.52%. Microsoft down 1.8%. And Apple down 2.8%. So yesterday when Nvidia dropped, 9.5%. Yeah. I didn't really have this conversation on the last pod when we were extolling the virtues of AstraZeneca being a £200 billion market cap. Right? Change numbers from pounds to dollars. Nvidia dropped £280 billion in value on one trading day, yesterday's trading day. So put the context into that, right? $280 billion is far more than $200 billion, right? And over the past, I've got it written down somewhere, past three trading days, excluding today, yeah? Nvidia has erased $400 billion in market cap in three trading days. So those individuals trading Nvidia and leveraged spread bets on Nvidia and the options and on Nvidia to for the shares to be going up have been spanked over the past 3 days, where the share price dropped over 12%. Because that 12%, even on a spread bet of £1, yeah, talking 2,000 points movements from 126 to 108, 16, 1800 points. So be very, very careful with regards to leverage. So what we were fearing today was more declines on the UK market. And fair enough, I think it was August the 29th, August the 30th. Again, after Henry and I spoke, and we were saying the markets could be fine now after that little wobble on the August the 5th. We got to, through August, and we hit 8,400, right? Intraday in the markets on the 30th of August. Today... Quickly just share this with you guys. FTSE went and hit an intraday low, yeah, of 8,219. We had a bit of a a boost later in the day when the markets didn't see the US markets wobbling for a second day this week. I mean, they had Labor Day on Monday. Tuesday was bad. Wednesday, they're settling a little bit. We don't know where it's going to close yet. The FTSE 100 closed at 8,269 minus 28 points. Now, bearing in mind that the US markets took a wobbly and were finishing, 1% here, 6% there, and so on and so forth. Yesterday, we actually got away fairly softly, I think, today. FTSE All Share was down 0.3% at 4,518. AIM was down 0.36% today at 759. So, all told, I think we did well, given the fact that the NASDAQ and S&P last night were down 3.3% and 2.1%, respectively. And NVIDIA, which holds the market together, was down 9.5. I'm going to go to you first, Matt, if I may, and ask you this question, and then and no NVIDIA's thoughts on this. But when you see, if you do stay up at night and watch the markets do what they do until 9 o'clock, like us other investing nerds do, when you see the market's gone out, we're going to do the full introduction in a minute, but what do you immediately think? Do you think, I'm not bothered, I'm going to go to bed? Or do you think, I might need to do something in the morning?
The latter, to be honest. So the former, as like basically market moves of that size mean one of two things. I've either missed the boat to sell, have a quick little look as to why things are going on. Last time, I honestly couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. And my adage is, if I haven't got a clue what's going on, don't do anything. Because it's the facetious thing of quotes of if all those around you are losing your heads and you aren't, you probably don't understand the magnitude of these situation. And it's kind of that. It's like, why is everyone panicking? I don't know. I'm gonna just do nothing because I looked at it. I'm looking at it again today, and I think the estimates are they're expecting. I think is it quarter two for the US? They're expecting GDP growth to be about 3%, and quarter three is expected to come up at 2.5% growth. Now, I'm not an economist by trade, but that doesn't feel like recessionary numbers of reporting that per quarter. I mean, to be honest, the UK would grab 3% for the entire year and be happy with it.
For the next 3 years, they'd be happy with that, Matt.
Yeah. So the market falling like that because from what I can see, people are now pricing in a US recession. They're talking about like on Friday, you've got the non-farm payrolls c coming in, that being another indicator. I mean, let's face it, Powell said at Jackson Hole, in all but explicitly saying it, they're cutting rates in September. It's how much they're cutting it by, essentially, is now down to it. So once again, yes, it's all fallen off a cliff, but I have a sneaky suspicion. I've seen this film before, and I know how it ends, and I have a sneaky suspicion that within a week or two, it honestly wouldn't surprise me if there's a recovery because a load of people will now be looking at 10% fall of, oh, you know what? I'm going to get back. I'm going to buy some Nvidia after that much of a fall because they posted, what was it, a doubling of profits? I think was what they did.
122%
Yeah.
revenue increase.
Yeah. So it's not as if they've posted a loss. They just basically they didn't grow by basically they grew by a ridiculous amount. The market wanted an insane amount of growth. That's basically where we are is the homework was marked as can do better. Which sadly
Absolutely.
most
Now,
that was how most of my homework was marked.
you did your homework, mate. Some of us didn't. That's, we'll go to the other student, Henry. And we've spoken about this last time. Thank you for that reply, Matt. I think it's important to actually talk about the macro and underlying things as well that people don't always necessarily think about. So thank you for that. Henry, your thoughts on last night's shenanigans, given the fact we'd experienced August 5th as well?
Well,
It's almost like the Yanks came back from holiday and was a little bit like, still drunk from the celebrations of
I
Labor Day.
mean, Matt zoomed in on the GDP figures there, which is a good starting point. 3% quarterly growth. You're absolutely right. The UK would love to have that. What I think we've missed a little bit there is the fact that there were also manufacturing and construction figures that were put out, which came in under par and are looking like quite strong recessionary indicators. Typically speaking, construction activity leads, or declining construction activity leads a recession. You've now got Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, like you say, definitely seems to be signaling a cut. Are we talking about a 0.25% cut? Are we talking about a 0.5% cut? Could be even more, who knows? But that uncertainty will cause both economic activity and market participants to almost postpone activity. So if you've got a new project you're about to kick off and you've got to borrow 100 million to go build a new factory, do you want to borrow it at 4% today or 3.5% next quarter? Well, why not wait a quarter and see if you can get 3.5%? And it's that sort of
Absolutely agree.
leading indicator that I think the market's starting to respond to and has responded to quite strongly. On the Nvidia thing, I was listening to a really interesting YouTube video about Nvidia specifically, and somebody had done a discounted cash flow forecast on it and determined that the market, to get your money back, Nvidia was going to have to grow at something like 8% for the next 30 years, every year. And if it couldn't do that, it was overpriced. And so even though Nvidia's dropped sort of 15% in a couple of weeks, the implication is that actually it's marked up by sort of 50%. So it's still got a long way to fall before it gets back in anywhere even vaguely resembling value territory. So if you bought it sort of 10 years ago and you've held it all the way up, fine, you might be able to take the recent pain without breaking a sweat. If you bought it a month ago and you're watching this, you could be in for a lot more pain on Nvidia. And I think, depending on where you are in the market and what you've done recently, that's always a factor to consider.
Absolutely brilliant point. And sorry, I was going to say this because Matt touched on it as well earlier, about the expectations and where the revenue came in and all the rest of it. And then you've just touched on it as well. And just to contextualize this, because my concern is people, Matt touched on the fact that if it's already up that much and you've missed it, just sit back and let it go. Don't chase it, right? So the best, so with regards to that, we're only looking at the last 5 years, right? 5 years, folks. And Nvidia shares are up over 24,700%. So you take away the 14-15% it's dropped in the past 3 or 4 trading days, and it's losing 400 million in market cap, billion in market cap. Over the past 12 months, it's up 124%. Yeah. So anyone chasing it over the past 12 months and buying it in the last, since the last trading update on the 28th, I'm like, well, why would you do that? Yeah. You think the results, or you know the results are going to be really, really good. So you're going to trade it for the next 5, 10%. You know what? The share price met expectations. So the company met expectations. The share price went, yeah, we wanted more, as Matt says. We wanted something insane. And the share price has dropped. It's now sitting at 106, 107, 108, may go to 110. But if you bought it at 126, 127, one whatever it what it whatever it hit previously, you're now sitting on a loss already. And will it break 130 again in the next 2 or 3 weeks? All that time on leverage, you're sitting there with a big red hole in your portfolio, in your trading pot that you can't do anything with until you sell out. Yeah. And it's that volatile that you've got a company that in 3 trading days can lose a valuation of 400 billion. That's what I call insane. Yeah. So you've got a situation where you've got, well, probably AstraZeneca, BP, and Shell have gone to zero. valuations.
It's absolutely bananas, but it's because of the total addressable market that the market is baking into the forecast. So what they're effectively saying is that every computer and every data center is going to have NVIDIA chips in it. Every future data center that's going to have a computer in it is going to have NVIDIA chips. In fact, we're going to have data centers on the moon. We're not even on the moon, but we're going to have data centers there, and they're going to have NVIDIA chips, and we're probably going to go to Mars and use them there too. And that's why we're going to value this company at such an astronomical valuation. And that forecast is so sensitive, because if all of a sudden you go, well, hang on a minute, we can't get to Mars for 5 years after we thought we were going to, the whole valuation falls over, because it's so extreme. These aren't cautious, conservative estimates at all. They really are, sort of saying NVIDIA is going to take over the world.
Yeah, sorry, Matt, we've been waiting to say something. Go on.
Yeah, so one thing I wanted to jump in, because actually Henry picked up on something that I completely forgot to mention, that yes, the is it the IMS purchasing managers index came out, and that came in low, and that was the manufacturing one. But out next week we've got the purchasing managers index for the services sector in the US, and that's what flipped everything around last time. And that'll be interesting to see if you've got a bifurcating American economy at the moment, because we had a negative, and you're right, then it is decelerating in the manufacturing sector. But what could be interesting is if the services sector is accelerating. Would be that you'd have a bifurcation of the American economy, where the services sector is starting to ramp up whilst construction and manufacturing is struggling, which possibly then, as you said, the lowering of interest rates might start then helping out the manufacturing sector.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe, and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Oh, good call. One last thing we'll say on NVIDIA is this. Yesterday, NVIDIA was subpoenaed by the US Justice Department. We were talking on the last pod about Google receiving antitrust investigations, weren't we, or something against them, and now they're looking at NVIDIA, saying that there shouldn't be there's investigations into monopolization of the AI revenue stream. So that's not going to help the shares if that goes down that route, because they've been buying up with their expensive paper other entities over the last few years and bought some significant bits and pieces. So that's going to be very, very interesting what happens with that. But if you've got one company allegedly holding up the market, and then you've got the justice system, US Justice Department going after them, and then everyone else saying, look, it's up 25,000% already in the past 5 years, it needs to come back to reality at some point. It's going to be very, very interesting going forward. Anyway, we've chatted for the last 20 minutes, and we've not given our special guest an introduction yet. I think, well, I like to do this in reverse, actually, and allow our special guests to introduce themselves. A little short synopsis of who you are, where you've been, what kind of work you do, short and sweet, a little bit about where you first started investing, Matt, or when you started investing, should I say, and some of the lessons learned. Just give you a free space to just do what you need to do and talk about for the next 10 minutes or so. Let people get a flavour of who you are. And then Henry and I will start asking you a few bits and pieces. I'll expand a bit more on your background. It's clear that you love your politics. It's clear you love your stocks. You've got a T-shirt that says "The Board Gamer," so we're going to get into that as well later on. And if you see me going for a switch, it's probably because I'm trying to find an ejection button to just get you to just jump out and away, because you're going far too nerdy for me and you've lost me. Whereas you and Henry will be like, arr, arr, and I'll just go, check please, and leave the pod. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to Matt Gregory. He's a really supportive individual that we've found on X. He's been listening to the pod for a little while, likes what we've been doing on here, and we thought we'd just give him the opportunity to share his investing journey. So over to you, Matt, with a single T.
Cheers, Peter. Well, first of all, thank you ever so much for approaching me and having me on the show. It's a real privilege to be here, so thank you very much. As you said, my name is Matthew Gregory. I'm a software engineer in the games industry, so I make the games that that you're all probably trying to stop your kids from spending too much time playing. I'm afraid that is my fault. I am to blame.
It's your fault.
Yes. And as Peter has said, yes, I am also a massive nerd. I fit the bill completely. There is an entire bookcase here just of roleplay games. So yes, and there's board games through there and all sorts of things. In terms of my investing journey, so I kind of had an interesting one where I was exposed to the fact that normal people could own stocks. And I think this is kind of something which delays a lot of people investing, is they think of stocks as something that only rich people do. When I was 8, unfortunately, my father died. He worked for what was the old electricity board before it all got privatized. And my mother got a payout of a lump sum and did what any self-respecting mid-80s housewife would do and just chucked it all into a savings account and got a phone call from her bank manager several weeks later asking her to come into the branch. Now, back in the 80s, your bank manager asking you to come in to discuss something was something to fear and dread. And essentially, he was saying to her, you've got this large pot of money sat here making you 3%. I think we should put this into the stock market for you. And he sat down with her and they basically built her a little portfolio full of the old FTSE 80 stalwarts of BP, Marks and Spencers, Tesco's, all the stuff that would have been in your classic British 80s portfolio. I didn't know about any of this time. I've kind of learned this later on. But by the time I was like in my late teens, I kind of found out that my mum was in. Well, like, so my mum's a hairdresser, so it's kind of like it lowers the barriers to what you think you need to get in when you kind of go, well, my mum invests and she's a hairdresser. She's not like some kind of like she's not like a Wall Street a banker or something.
Not Mrs. thing, Gordon Gekko.
Yes. So I was going, well, mum can do this. I'm sure I can do this. So so after I graduated uni, I basically, back when you could go down to the on the high street, and basically went into a bank with the Halifax at the time, and basically wandered in, and this is pre-financial crisis, and opened a stocks and shares ISA, and spoke to a very nice lady who was an in-branch IFA about setting me up an ISA, and we had a bit of a chat. And I've always been into current affairs. I watch Newsnight a lot. I mean, I'm the kid who at 10 asked my mum if I could stay up to watch the Berlin Wall come down. Current affairs has kind of always been a thing that's always interested me. But so I was able to leverage not financial knowledge, but just knowledge of the world. So I kind of went in and said, like, I'd like to have half my money going into the FTSE, a quarter into the US. I want to have a little bit going into a tech speculative fund, some into Japan. So you're like going, okay, yeah, that's a very adventurous but a very good portfolio you've built there. And so I basically would go into the bank like once a year and just do that. And I basically built up enough to afford to put down the deposit on my first house from saving into that. I was fortunate enough that I had that cash in 2009, so I was able to buy at the very, very, very bottom of the housing crash. So I was able to get myself quite a good deal there. And then obviously I was very short on money, having bought a Dura Upper. So the only person who benefited from that purchase was Kingfisher with my 5,000 trips to B&Q. And then once kind of actually things have begun settling down, I wanted to get back into putting money into the market for just saving for more long-term goals. And kind of decided, well, I don't want to do, obviously the options that I had when I originally had my Halifax ISA were no longer there. And I've got a personal rant about the fact that it's so much harder to get access to financial advice these days compared to how it was then. But that's a different topic. But I also kind of wanted to invest in companies rather than investing in funds. I've never been a fan of funds. My adage is I'm perfectly capable of losing money myself. I don't need to pay someone to do that for me. And also, I just found it very
interesting. That makes all three of us, by the way, that are perfectly good at losing money. You're not on your own.
I don't like paying someone to lose money for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
So I just began probably like most investors, kind of like in the early 2010s, going to the Motley Fool website and kind of like reading their articles and kind of like look there. Actually opened my first ISA through the Motley Fool. And just kind of quietly built knowledge. I had a bit of an interesting prang with my first ever stock I purchased. I purchased BP the week before the Deepwater Horizon accident happened. So I learned.
Hold up. Right. So you'd done some research, mm-hmm. yeah, and decided that you didn't want to lose any money. And what you needed to buy was one of the bluest of blue chip stocks.
Yeah.
Which I think may have been the number one or number two stock there.
It was BP. I was like going, I'm going to take it safe. I'm not going to be risky. BP pays a chunky dividend. It's pretty safe. And then basically I turn on the news, basically having my cornflakes in the morning and go,
right. So the day that you put it down, that whatever worth of money, you don't understand how much it was. This is my safety one. I'm just going to leave it and let it alone. The very next day.
A week later,
that happened. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you had at least a week of feeling like Gordon Gekko.
Wow, Matt. I am so sorry to hear that. That is horrible.
It's horrible, but at the same time, it was. I can't remember if it was Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett who says it, but it's a case of if you want to be investing in stocks yourself, you have to know if you're willing to accept losing half your money, staying put. And I got to learn that lesson rather cheaply, to be honest.
At the beginning of a smaller portfolio, learning them lessons is relatively, I'll use the word loosely, priceless.
Yes.
When you've got a chunk of change in there, and your portfolio halves in a week, it's not so well. It doesn't take so long.
So that was my first BP. Interesting prang, as it were. There would be many other mistakes. That's probably the one which was like the. Oh, because basically I found out by turning on the news when I was having my cornflakes to go, there's an oil rig on fire. That's quite a big fire. That's a BP oil. Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. You and every single pension fund and other institutional fund out there, mate, would have been going like that, going, you know, that was the event of events back then. You know,
yeah.
For a decade, I think.
And so I did actually about selling immediately. I did end up selling at a loss about 3 years later. I unfortunately had pretty much bought it at the peak, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
But I held on to it because my rationale was I looked at kind of like they were giving estimates for how much the cleanup was going to cost and all that sort of thing.
Remember it well.
I kind of did a bit of digging into just what at the time was the annual profits for BP, and I began looking like they were saying scary numbers for the cost of like how much they were going to have to pay out and all this sort of thing. I think they were like. The estimates for the bills was like in the 40 to 50 billion territory, wasn't it? I think it was around that.
I don't remember the exact numbers, mate, but there was
it was a massive, big number.
Massive, yeah.
And I kind of began looking at BP and realised that technically, whilst that number was very big, BP's profits were also quite big as well. And in theory, if they really wanted to and just didn't pay out, didn't invest any money in the company and just chose to plough it all into paying off their costs, it was about 3 years of profits for them. So in terms of actually managing that cost, it started to be putting it into perspective. It didn't seem to be this world-ending catastrophe.
That it
kind of felt like, okay, that's a number that they can split over a couple of years and pay that off. So I guess that's kind of the thing that saved me from just throwing money away then. I just kind of wish that I'd bought in at the very, very bottom after it exploded.
A week later.
Yes.
This is the question though, Matt, right? And I'll ask Henry to answer this as well in a minute. Were you to have researched BP, right, and not bought it that week, and the week following, you see it at 50% off with all those scary numbers saying they're going to have to redress this, they're going to have to deal with this spill, it's like game-changing news. There's people actually saying this, however, whole business is going to be gone.
Yeah.
Would you have taken the risk of buying the shares at 50%
off? At that time, I don't think I would have. If I'm being brutally honest,
we'll take that answer. Henry, would you have done that? What would you have done?
Considering you had the opportunity, big fan of oil
given
companies,
we're talking. I'm not even sure you'd been allowed to actually buy these, Henry. We're talking April 2010, 14 years ago.
I'd have had to go in with a pair of stilts and a fake
Guardian
mustache.
You'd have gone in with a Guardian, mate, because you'd still been a pup.
No, I wouldn't have gone near it.
And this is the principle we keep talking about, a psychology of conviction. And you can add with your conviction, and Matt, you've answered it brilliantly there. In the sense of you did your research, you looked at it and think, I don't believe them numbers. They can actually address this maybe in 3 years' time. And eventually you got rid of it and you did take a loss, whatever it was. But if you had sold immediately, I'm sure that your loss would have been even greater.
But the thing is, you've also got that Warren Buffett quote about cockroaches in the kitchen. So one oil rig's just exploded and cost them $50 billion. How many more are going to go bang over the next 3 years whilst they're fixing this one? That would have been front of my mind.
I took the opposite view. I was convinced that they're probably now going around every oil rig and every pipeline in the world.
Think so.
And
you'd
tightening
so.
Every single bolt,
absolutely.
Basically.
That's why health and safety has been going on and on and on and on and on and on to create its own industry across every sector. You know, you can barely put a ladder up now in a company, you know, car park without somebody saying, get some straps on, get a hard hat on and blah, blah, blah. You know. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine.
Please continue.
Yeah,
mate.
And so I've kind of written down some notes here because in a way, kind of like the reason why I bought BP, and I think I'm going to talk about this kind of, but basically I bought it because I read lots of articles about why this was a good stock to have in your portfolio, that it wasn't going to rocket in value, but it was theoretically not going to go down in price too much and was going to be giving you a yield. It was fulfilling this kind of like safe kind of like cornerstone of your portfolio. A bit later on, I'm kind of doing some more research, kind of like just reading a few more articles, maybe spreading myself out a bit more. I started to learn about kind of understanding what the PE rating was on companies. So I then began looking into buying an. I shouldn't say company. I was looking for more about having low PE on stocks and going, okay, so what I should be buying is low PE stocks because those are the ones that have got. But the thing I want to focus on is the fact that I'm saying stocks, not companies. And then a bit later on, I kind of began starting to read some books. So I got some of the Financial Times guides, and I think the first book I ever got myself was Selecting Shares That Perform, because I kind of was going, okay, I'm basing all of my decisions on just reading what other people are writing. And so as at that point, I kind of learned about returns on stocks and that sort of thing. But I don't know quite when the change happened. And I think this is kind of like the light bulb moment with most investors, is I stopped looking for stocks and began looking for companies. And stopped looking for what is the best stock to own, and then go, okay, I'm buying this company rather than I'm buying this share. And it was around that time was when I'd read quite a few books, but the thing that I couldn't quite put together, and I think it was a Dave Stevens article in the FT, in the Adventurous Investor, that I heard about. I finally learned about like stock screening and that sort of thing, and actually the value of paying for access to quality data and quality tools as a private investor. And that was when I went down, and that's when I first learned about your sponsor SharePad and the other one, Stockopedia. I went down the Stockopedia route first of all, and I found that was a complete game changer for me. I was able to look, I'd been using stuff like Google Finance and Yahoo Finance, but I suddenly found I had access to like a decade's worth of financial statements. I had access to much more metrics, just much more ways of filtering and understanding and just learning, and just kind of it began directing, informed how I was researching things, to the point where I kind of, okay, I need to learn. I was kind of understanding where my weaknesses were. So like one of the things I began researching a bit into, and just found a good book that gave me the level that I needed of accounting, of understanding, okay, on a balance sheet, when you borrow £1 million, you put £1 million asset down, but you also put £1 million of put £1 million loan in the liabilities, but then you put £1 million asset of cash on the other side. Now that is obviously like 101 if you're an accountant, but if you're not an accountant, that's kind of a whole different way of looking at the world, in the same way as like understanding how money kind of goes in the top of an income statement and gets eaten away by this process, and then finally you kind of have the actual net income dropping out of the bottom after it's gone through this process, and then finally understanding, okay, this is how what a cash flow statement means, and that's actually what the depreciation and amortization means, and all that sort of thing. And finally, being able to understand, okay, this is how these work out, and okay, now I'm starting to understand this is why a good return on invested capital is good, or this is how ROE is useful but can be manipulated, and all that sort of thing. And so I kind of was able to like traverse well a bit more, and I kind of began reading a bit more widely, also began reading a bit more special literature. So I began subscribing to the Investor's Chronicle, and so that's how I came across Phil Oakley and Algie Hall, and began anything written by those two I just devoured. I've got both of their books.
There's two of us on the screen as well with you here that have done the similar sort of thing. Learn from the best, that's what it's all about. Learn from the best there is.
And so, absolutely. Yeah, and that's kind of basically how I basically just blundered my way through, and then just quietly got to a point where, as I said, it kind of like, and I kind of find myself today that I now buy companies because after having screened the market for characteristics that I think are important to me, I then go off and then have a bit of a deeper dive into the company, kind of understand what that company does, look at the company reports, try and understand how it makes its money, and to the best of my ability understand if I think it's got a quality management. Generally, my go-to guide if to try and get an idea about management is if an issue crops up in the previous year's annual reports, is looking to see if that issue is mentioned in the following year and seeing if it was addressed or is being addressed. That means that at least they're actually someone is sane in charge of the ship, essentially.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Good call. Good shout. And did you say what filtering tool you're using now?
I'm using ShareePad is what I'm using now.
That's the correct answer. Okay. Henry, I'm joking. And what are your thoughts regarding all of that? Because we've all had different journeys. I think this is the beauty of what Matt's been saying here, that there's no right way to get to where you at this point, and we've still got loads of learning still to do. You know what I mean? And I think it's important to acknowledge the fact that there's no right way or right amount to start with either. You know, whether it's 200 quid or 500 quid or £1,000 that's been gifted to you, or you saved up to just buy your very, 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 very first stock. What are your thoughts, mate?
Well, there's lots of very familiar notes in that story, Matt, that I really like. I love this idea that you try to be cautious in your first investment and end up blowing it up. You know, well, you didn't blow it up, they blew it up for you. But, I was very similar. I picked five companies that I knew, that I understood. I picked Carillion, I picked HSBC, I picked Centrica, you know. And the first name off the list, you think, great, massive outsourcing contractor. Oh, wait, hang on, it's gone bankrupt. And, you know, you sit there as a new investor and you've got two choices. Either you crawl under the desk and cry and wail and go back to cash, or you think, well, hold on, how do I do this better? I love the fact as well that, you know, one day you realize that there's a difference between a company and a share price. There's this thing called the PE ratio. What is a PE ratio? Well, it's your price to earnings. So you're buying a pound of earnings. How much are you paying for a pound of earnings? If I give you a pound every year for the rest of your life, you know, that's worth, I don't know, let's say £60. I'll give you £60 and then one day you'll be gone. How much would you pay for that £60? 61, 65, 70, 75, 100, 200? When you put it in that sort of context, PE ratios suddenly become very different beasts for you and how you're valuing shares. And to then go on one step further and start looking at, well, hold on a minute, I'm just looking at what other people are doing. I met this guy called Peter and he told me this share was good, so I'll go and buy it. Why? What's his methodology?
No, I did do that sort of thing because I was initially, I've got to be here, like step one of my investing journey was I'm buying this because I like an article about it, essentially.
Exactly.
Which is no different to still, I've heard it from a bloke down the pub.
Yeah, Matt, when you it's, think still, about it's it. Still happening today. I see it on X, I see it there or whatever. X, Y, and Z's just talked about that stock and he's the go-to guru. She's the go-to guru. And I'm going, that's not how you buy stocks.
You have to have your own methodology. So
please don't do it.
Peter and Wheely, and then later Peter and myself, you know, names come up on this podcast. And you have to have your own methodology for screening it. So somebody's mentioned this name, they've given you a bit of background on it. It sounds kind of interesting, but now you've got to go away and you've got to look at the metrics and the performance and make a decision yourself about whether you like it. Peter comes out with some names and I think, well, but you couldn't pay me to own that, honestly. You know, and then on the flip side, sometimes I think Rightmove was one we discussed a while back, and that's up, you know, 50% or whatever it was since we first talked about it. And that's just sat on my watch list. So, but you have to have your own methodology. And that's the difference between just reading articles and passively absorbing other people's opinions and actually having your own framework. So, you know, that whole journey, I think, is fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, there's something you touched on in there as well. And Henry's actually spot on about all different journeys, and it doesn't matter. It's about having the journey and being brave enough to actually take that first step and the next step and the next step, and having an open mindset, you know, open. I want to learn. I want to get better. I want to improve. I want to digest. You know, you, me and Henry are like going, you know, please, Phil, please, Algie, give us some more. Like, you know, Oliver twisting it. You know, we want more information. We want to learn more from you guys. You know, you touched on the bit there, which I was trapped in for a long time, about low PE, that safety net. It's not too racy. Nothing's going to happen to it. It's always going to be there. And if you can get a dividend, whoop, 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 sort of thing. And I keep banging on about this book. And if anyone still hasn't read this book, they've got to go out and buy it. And it's How to Make Money in Stocks by William O'Neill, right? So pre-2000, that was me, right? Been in the markets 10 years-ish. And all it was about for me was low PE shares, safest, can generate great long-term investment returns. Yeah. You read a book which goes, Peter, you're stupid. This is how to do it. This is how to outperform what you've done previously. Not trying to outperform anybody else, outperform what you've achieved previously. Turned it on its head, right? And essentially, basically saying the best performing stocks in history have been the stocks trading at the highest PE. What did we say earlier? Nvidia, last 5 years, up 24,700%. And for the past 5 years, there's been a whole cohort of people, yeah, business professionals, investment professionals, you fund management, hedge fund managers that have gone, 2019, Nvidia's overpriced. 2020, Nvidia's overpriced. All the way up to August 28th, Nvidia's overpriced. 25,000 points percentage later, they're still saying it's overpriced. Next year, somebody else will be saying it's probably overpriced. It might still be higher. It may have come down a lot. We don't
know. What have I just said 10 minutes ago? You know, it's priced to grow at 30% for the next 30 years or whatever it is. What if it does it?
But most people aren't going to hold it for 20 years. You've only had to hold it for the last five. That's to be a game changer in your portfolio.
That's
that
true.
10 grand that you had there going up 25 times, yeah, has got you $250,000 if you were put 10 grand in there.
Yeah. It's quite interesting, and
the important thing here, Matt and Henry, is what you said about opening the book. Yeah, not going to that scribe or that guru. There are no gurus, folks, right? There are none, right? There are people that are learned, that can share information with, they can write great articles, right? But they don't own all of the shares that are going to be going up steadily without blips and without dips and declines. Find and source the ability to find your own stocks and not wait for anybody else. I keep saying that almost every pod. But I see people, Simon Thompson's recommended that. Simon Thompson's recommended loads of stuff. Yeah. Half of it, you know, is a bit like me on his saying about some of the stocks. I'm saying, go and research that. I'm not recommending them. I'm saying, look, go and research that. They're not the best stocks. I think they're okay, but that's me. Simon Thompson is another person saying that's a good stock. But half of them don't work out. So two stocks I'm going to mention very, very quickly, because we need to talk about stocks when they go wrong, right? When they go wrong, folks, right? Find a podcast where people talk about stocks that go wrong, please, right? It's not just us, right? So I was having a look around last week for some of my stocks, had lots of discussions with various people over the years about the stock. Well, I was in early in this stock. Embryonic stages of people talking about lithium miners and electric vehicles and so on and so on and so forth. And one of the stocks I bought had a different name back then. It wasn't a name change that caused the problem, as most often not. People try and change names to hide bad stuff going on. And it was Iron Ridge, it was called back then. It became Atlantic Lithium, and I bought it 2019. And I've held it and I've dealt with it, all kinds of shenanigans with it. Share price went all the way up, came all the way down. I'm sitting at it, I'm looking, going, 6 years on, 7 years on, I'm going, I've just had enough of this. I've had enough of it. I've had enough of it because of all the different things that have been said, going back to what Matt said about, have they dealt with that? Last year, they said they're going to do that. Have they dealt with that? 6 months ago, they said they're going to do that. Have they dealt with that? And I'm sitting there going, it's sitting at, you know, almost multi-year lows. And I'm going, what's the next shoe to drop here? What's the next thing they're not going to do in the next 3 or 4 months? When's the next dilution? If that, they've got all these things here that could be potential catalysts for Atlantic Lithium shares to go higher. I need to give them another 3 months, 6 months, or another year. And then something just goes off and you go, nah, I am not going to give them any more time. With that amount of money there that's left, or what I initially invested, I can probably do better, as Matt says, than that management group with that money than they can. So I'm going to take it somewhere else. And I took the loss and I walked away, and I've got people in my DMs asking me questions on OpenX going, what have you done that for? What's your reasoning behind that? All these questions. And I'm going, because I can. And have a look at, and I'll just, I pull this link to the RNS for the last 300 RNSs. I said, let's have a look at this, because I've had to go through all of that. And now I'm going and I'm walking away. Took the hit, moved on, took the losses, and I'll do better with that money. And I've already reinvested some of that elsewhere. Yeah. And same with, what's the other one? Asley. Yeah. That European stock.
Oh, it's winding up, isn't it?
Yeah. Wind down, wind up. And the beauty of that one, Henry, is that today, I'm not sure you guys have seen this, but Tritox Eurobox, yeah?
Oh, Tritax.
Eurobox got a bid today, right? And it's down significantly from the IPO, which was oversubscribed back in 2019, I think it was. £1 IPO. It's paid out some dividends reasonably consistently. The bid today values it at 68.5p. Even with dividends over the past 6 years or whatever long it's been IPO'd, people are still underwater, right? The discount to the NAV, I think, is 14%, if I recall rightly, right? So you've got the NAV there. They've recommended the takeover at 14%. I've sold Asley at something like 18%-ish to the NAV. If we get rid of 10% of that NAV, his NAV then goes down to 64. I'm thinking, well, why would I wait around for 3 or 4 years? But 2 or 3 years for them to sort out this wind down. I can do better with that in the next 2 years than they can. So you've got to be very mindful sometimes. And this is only from, like you say, Matt, from reading stuff, becoming more and more aware of what your options are. You don't have to wait around and let these people play around with your money and maybe lose you some money.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.